Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to the In Conversation With series, a series where I speak to notable figures in the realm of financial services. Listen as they share their personal journeys, thoughts on the industry, and advice for aspiring advisors.
I'm Lois Valerie, Chief Reporter, and this episode I'm joined by Tessa Lee, who is Managing Director of Money Info, a fintech firm based in Warwickshire. Tessa, hello.
Hi, Lois. How are you doing?
Yes, good, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. It's great to be on your podcast, so thank you for having me.
Well, thanks very much for joining me. So I think maybe if you'd like to start off telling our listeners just a bit about yourself and how and why you got into financial services. What was it that attracted you to the sector in the first place?
I'm sure it's as exciting as everybody else's. It wasn't intentional, put it that way, but which I think is quite common, isn't it, for a lot of people in this industry. So I'm the Managing Director of Money Info. So as you said, we're a fintech. We deliver client portals for financial advisors and wealth managers on their desktop, on their mobiles, and uniquely on branded apps for all of our firms. So we're all about building client loyalty and improving profitability and helping, you know, with that compliance confidence as well. And we're really sort of on a mission, I guess, as a business to make financial advisors and wealth managers, you know, be the best that they can be by really taking that client engagement to the next level. And we work with lots of really ambitious and forward-thinking financial planning and advice firms, which is fantastic. In terms of how I got here, I did classics and classical archaeology at university because at that point in my life, I wanted to be the next Indiana Jones. And as with all things, wow. I kind of went through university, yeah, really loved it, and then realized that it's quite hard to become the next Indiana Jones, and you don't make a lot of money out of it to pay things like your rent. So back in those days, you know, it's longer ago than I care to remember, I guess, you looked in the local paper for work, for a job, and I ended up getting a job at a local financial advisory business in Warwick, a financial advisory and general insurance, as a junior administrator. And I'd never had any exposure to financial advice at all, didn't really know what they did. And I worked for a fabulous director called Simon Jackson. He actually now advises all the Money Info staff. He's our financial advisor for the business, which is lovely. We've kept in touch. And I became his junior administrator, basically helping him, a bit like a PA, I guess, type role. And while I was there, we were looking to upgrade the technology that we were using, the client relationship management technology that we were using within the business, because at that point, it was all very kind of green screen type technology. You kind of tabbed through. We had a typing pool. We'd dictate all of our memos and faxes and all that kind of stuff. And a company came in to see us called First Software, and we ended up moving over to that system, which I'm sure listeners will be familiar with. They're now part of IRS, so the Advisor Office System, which is just about still going, I hear.
Oh, yeah.
And as part of that, I got really interested in technology, and I ended up kind of leading the technology, sort of looking after the technology within that business, being responsible for kind of helping people out, upgrading, that kind of thing. And I ended up leaving there after a few years and going to work for First Software, initially on their help desk, so picking up calls from clients, helping them out with the software. And I worked my way through that business, and my career kind of evolved. And I guess I did pretty much most roles that you can do in a technology business, bar coding the software myself. So I worked in consultancy, I worked in help desk, CRM, training, and I ended up in product management, looking after the design and build of the new functionality and new products that we had there. So it was a really exciting career, and it really, I guess, got my love of technology going, which leads me to, I guess, where I am today, because when that business sold a number of years back now, myself and a couple of my colleagues left and set up by ourselves, and our CEO, Mick Cons, who's CEO of Money Info today, kind of got us back together and said, look, we've got this product we want to take to market, and it needs you guys to kind of execute it. And that's where we are today. So Money Info has grown, you know, over the last few years, and now we're supporting just over 180 brilliant financial advice and wealth management firms to deliver totally game-changing client engagement, and I absolutely love it.
Great, yeah, it's really interesting to hear how you got into it, and probably fewer villains to fight than if you had been the next Indiana Jones, I imagine.
Correct. It might have been a bit more fun being Indiana Jones, but yeah, absolutely. Probably a safer career choice than that, definitely.
I think I said when I was at primary school, I think I've written it in a feature before, I wanted to be a dinosaur hunter, which I assume I meant paleontologist, which is quite different from journalism, but
it is, but
investigative, I suppose.
Exactly. You're still hunting for stories, aren't you, even if it's not dinosaurs? Although you may come across a few dinosaurs. I don't know, Lois. I'm not here to comment on that one.
Totally set you up there. No. Great. So one of the things I did want to talk to you about was technology. It seems to be on my patch, not officially, just because I personally am very interested in sort of fintech and advisor tech and how it's all developing and so on, and how it can sort of, one of the things I think it can maybe potentially do is help close the advice gap, which I know some advisors don't believe exists, but others do. So what are your sort of thoughts on how technology can help advice in the future?
Well, how it can in the future and how it already is, I guess. You'll know particularly over recent years, we've seen a massive shift in how advisory firms are using technology. We've seen a big progression towards that hybrid advice type model, which means different things to different firms, I think. But essentially for us, it's about, you know, human and technology working together to automate and make parts of the advice process more efficient and cost effective and maybe profitable, whilst at the same time maintaining that human connection that every client, no matter who they are, every client really values. And that's what we find with, you know, the advisor that we deal with. It's all about the peace of mind that they're delivering to their clients, and that human connection is so important. I don't think computers will ever replace that in advice, but I do think that computers are brilliant at doing repetitive tasks without getting bored. They're very good at, you know, making sure the same things are done time and time again. So that's where we see that technology can really help. And of course, we've seen the migration from away from face-to-face advice for a while, certainly when we went into lockdown and we had to, you know, look at new ways of working with Teams and Zoom and all that kind of good stuff. And I think what that did is it really opened the advisory community's eyes as to how simple it can be to adopt and adapt to new technology, because they all did it overnight. It was brilliant. And we saw, you know, the adoption of e-signature technology was another big one. I think we had a 500% increase, you know, in the first 3 months of the pandemic on e-signatures going through the portal. Those things are, you know, small pieces of the jigsaw that can be implemented and adopted really quickly, but these small things make a big impact. And we've seen that continue since then, because as I say, everybody's eyes are opened as to this stuff doesn't have to be terribly difficult. It doesn't have to have months and months of project work to get it going. Actually, if you've got the ambition to do it and you've got the appetite to do it, you can make, you know, incremental changes in your business to make huge differences over time. So now we're seeing more firms adopting technology to support their advice process. So that might be around things like digital fact find. We've seen a huge growth in that over the years. It might be around automating the delivery of documentation and reports to client. That was a huge thing over lockdown, where firms weren't able to be in offices. People were having to still go in to print and post reports and send them out to clients. And the ability to deliver those electronically via an app is a game changer, really, for firms. And I think this is just rolling now. I think most people are over the my clients won't use technology opinion that we've had for so long, or they're older, so they won't use technology. I think we've seen that change hugely as well in terms of the types of people that will use technology, and that's across all demographics. And our clients see that in the adoption of the software that they have. You know, they see, no matter whether somebody is in their 40s or in their 70s, they're seeing, you know, pretty similar adoption statistics across those age groups, interestingly. So it just shows that, you know, if advice firms have got the wherewithal and the appetite to do this and the ambition to, you know, to change their business for the better, they can really get some fantastic results and deliver really nice, engaging solutions for their clients. And moving forward, I don't see that changing. I think the things that tend to drive technology in advice are not just about the changing attitudes of consumers and the changing world that we live in, and the fact that everybody now has a smartphone or a tablet and you have apps for everything, and you know you manage your social life, your entertainment, your travel, your hotel bookings, whatever it happens to be. It's not just about the end consumer. It's also about the industry driving innovation as well. And regulation, much as it's not always, you know, welcomed, it does drive innovation and it does, you know, drive people to adapt their businesses. So we saw that with GDPR. We saw that with MiFID II. We're seeing that now with consumer duty, you know, how firms are realizing that technology is well placed to help them serve their clients and help them evidence and manage their consumer duty obligations as well. So I think, you know, regulation has a part to play in driving technology as well as us fintechs and the advisory firms that we work with.
Yeah, definitely. I think some of the bigger providers could get on board with this a bit more. I've had personal dealings with a few and getting them to let me use an electronic signature or asking them to not send me loads and loads of letters via the traditional postal service is quite difficult to get.
And I think you're right. And there's a distinction, isn't there, between, you know, the life and pensions providers. The platforms tend to be a little bit more forthcoming in what they can do. And some of the platforms are doing some really innovative stuff. You know, the Seckles, the Hubwises, Third Financials of this world are doing really good work in working with fintechs like us, connecting up that ecosystem so that we can start to work together more effectively to deliver a really good process for our firms. And I think that, Lois, is getting better as well. We're all more open. Every one of us has got our APIs. I think we've all got our roadmaps and our own agendas as to what we want to achieve, but we realize that, you know, nobody's going to produce a one-size-fits-all piece of technology that's going to do everything an advice firm needs. So we have to work together to give businesses choice so that they can be flexible and they can pick and choose the pieces of technology that work for them and that work for their clients. But you're right, from a provider perspective, I'd like to see more engagement with fintechs like us to see what we can do to really deliver some great outcomes for our clients, our mutual clients, and for their clients.
Yeah, definitely. It was interesting. I wrote a story recently about Amazon sort of inching closer towards financial services with its, I think it's just launched, well, fairly recently launched a home insurance comparison service. And then it was the day after, I think it was, or 2 days after, or certainly a week after, within the same week, the FCA launched their probe on big tech and its potential impact on financial services. I just wondered, if you think big tech firms like Amazon and Google are a threat to existing insurance firms, life companies, or if you think it's just a different proposition.
Look, it's been coming for a long time, hasn't it? We've been rumbling about this and when it will happen, and it's starting to happen now. So I think it was inevitable. I think they potentially do pose a threat for some of those bigger providers. I don't think they pose a threat to the financial advice community and the wealth management community because it's a very different model and it's a different proposition. Mm-hmm. But certainly Amazon, you know, look at the audience they have already. We all use it, right? Amazon orders list is completely random, the things that I buy from there, but it's convenient, you know, that one click buying, and they've got that, haven't they? They've got the data around us as consumers. They know what we like. They know what we're looking at. They know what we're buying. All of that insight is potentially very powerful. And they're a brand that people know. And I guess to some extent we trust it, don't we? Because we're quite happy to go on and put our credit card details into Amazon and off we go. So I think there is a potential threat there to the more traditional providers across the industry, but less so, I think, in the advice space. Because, you know, one of the things I've always believed, because it's where I started off, and we believe at all of us at Money Info, is in the value that good financial advice brings. And you can't replace that with a computer. And, you know, what our job is to do is to look at how we can make that process more efficient and therefore more profitable. And that's, you know, when some firms will start to look at that advice gap and think, actually, we can offer our services to more customers now because we're able to automate elements of it. That's kind of what the ripple effect, I guess, of it is.
Yeah, definitely. I wrote the cover feature for November for Money Marketing's print issue on, it was sort of looking at what clients in the future might look like. I actually started off by just to illustrate the rate at which technology has improved over the past decade or so. Yep. That's being generous. So I said about my first mobile phone I ever got, which was when I was 11 years old, and it was a Nokia 3310,
which had
the ability to text, make calls, and play Snake. I don't know if you remember Snake.
I remember Snake. I do. Yeah.
And then, cut to 20 years later, and I'm still out of date with my iPhone 11. It's ridiculous the pace at which they're improving or sort of evolving. So that's how I start off the feature. But then I go into, even though I think the generalization is that younger people want to do everything via technology and don't really want to speak to a person, which isn't necessarily the case. They may want to have more options for how to contact people. So maybe using WhatsApp or messaging services sometimes. Sometimes I do find live chat easier just because I can then carry on working instead of having to sit on hold for hours. But it's interesting how the client of the future, they're still going to be human with human needs and probably want to speak to a human if the issue is
I totally agree with that, Lois. I totally agree with that, because I think it doesn't matter who you are, whether you've got £5,000, £10,000, £20,000 to invest, or £200,000 or £2 million, to you, that's a substantial amount of money. That's a big choice and decision you need to make. And all of us want the reassurance of an expert saying to us, yes, you're doing the right thing. And this is, you know, this is how you should go about it. And this is what you should do. I think we all value that. And it's, you know, it's not as easy as buying something on Amazon. It's a very different process. And there are very different emotions and rationales and behaviors, I guess, and I'm not an expert, a behavioral expert by any means, but that are associated with that. So I really believe that, yes, younger generations will want to do more with technology, and you're absolutely spot on with the choice that they'll want about how they connect and how they communicate with advisors, whether that's by WhatsApp style messaging or chatbots or video messaging, whatever it happens to be. But they're still going to want that human element to advise them. I don't think you know, it is natural for us to trust computers to do that piece. And if you look at planners like Chanel Pattinson, who's done a Money Marketing sponsored podcast, which is brilliant. Yeah. She's set up her business to focus on the younger generation and to give them virtual, face-to-face financial planning and advice. And there's a real market for that for her, because she's looked to her peers and said, what is it that you want and what is it that you need? And they want, you know, they want to talk to somebody. They want that human financial advice. So, yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Totally agree. It's things are going to change. Technology is going to move on a pace. Who knows what we'll be doing with VR and AI and all this fantastic stuff in the future. But ultimately, all of us are humans, and we value human connections and relationships, don't we? The world would be a sad place without it, wouldn't it? If we were all in the metaverse, never seeing each other in real life again, I dread to think.
I know. Well, it was useful having video calls during lockdown, but I did miss seeing people in real life.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
I've also been watching a lot of dystopian futuristic films recently, so I am a little bit skeptical of AI, but I may be wrong.
It can get quite scary when you think about it, can't you? I've seen the new Meta advert, isn't it? All about the metaverse that's going out on TV at the moment, about how we'll all be doing things with virtual headsets. And, you know, I just think, well, yeah, to some extent it's brilliant, and it makes things really accessible, and that, you know, there are lots of applications for that. But actually, I like a good chin wag down the pub, Lois, to be fair. Yeah, and I'd miss that. I couldn't do that. You know, we had a virtual pub at Money Info when we were in lockdown, and we used to meet up over Zoom on a Friday lunchtime and, you know, do a quiz or have a chat. But there's nothing better than seeing people in real life.
No, definitely. And you get more one-on-one conversations as well, I find. If you're in a big group on Zoom, it's a lot harder to... It's
difficult, yeah. Yeah,
just have to definitely sort of speak one at a time and hope you don't interrupt each other in an awkward way.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So I think spot on with sort of hybrid using that, but also still having face-to-face.
Yeah, definitely.
Another thing that I discovered while I was writing this feature was And I mean, I think anecdotally, it's known anyway, more and more women are wanting financial advice. I think traditionally, again, I'm massively generalizing, but certainly before I joined Money Marketing, what I considered a financial advice client was a sort of middle-aged white man with millions wanting to turn them into multi-millions or billions. And I think that is still the case. Obviously, there are still those people needing financial advice, but I think it's very much shifting. So more and more, as we've talked about, younger people, but also women are wanting financial advice. Would you agree?
I think I would agree, definitely. And it's more accessible now. It's people are more aware of financial advice than they ever were. And you're right, when I started, when I worked for the financial advice firm back in the day, and this is probably, gosh, I don't know, 25 years ago or something, most of our clients were a Mr. and Mrs., but it was Mr. that was the kind of lead client that would take the lead and manage that kind of relationship and that process. And that was, you know, fairly typical, pretty much across the board. And we are seeing that change. We're seeing that in the firms that we're working with and how they work with their clients. We're seeing specialist women, you know, financial advisors, or, you know, that are set up to specifically, you know, help women with their financial planning and their financial objectives. And I think that's as a result of, I guess, the world's opened up all over the place, hasn't it? And we social media has had a big part to play in educating people, not necessarily in the right way always with finances, but in making people aware of services that are out there and the benefits that that they can have. So I would agree. I think we're seeing more of that. And we're seeing, of course, more women in financial advice careers as well, aren't we? You know, I now walk into an event, if I'm going to a networking event or speaking somewhere, or we're, you know, we're going to a conference, and it used to be a sea of, you know, everybody says this, grey heads and grey suits, doesn't it? and now it's actually much more represented by women. It's still not, you know, representative of the population as a whole, but it's great to see many more women getting involved in financial advice careers and in, you know, in senior positions within financial advice as well. So I've certainly seen that change, and the suits have gone from grey to navy blue now as well, mostly.
I know,
absolutely.
Great to get a bit of different coloured suits as well.
exactly.
That's great. The big tech probe that I mentioned from the FCA on the same day, I noticed that they had also launched a consultation into how they can crack down on greenwashing, which is so ESG is an issue that I'm particularly interested in personally, because I used to write for a sustainability and environmental business publication. So it's something that when I first joined Money Marketing, it was a sort of familiar territory. So I tended to gravitate towards it because I knew a bit of stuff about it already. But I also am personally interested in mainly climate and social issues.
Yeah.
But it seems to me, so I've written in the past about utilities sector and food and drink sectors. And when I joined Money Marketing and I was writing about financial services, they seem to be a bit behind in terms of how they're tackling climate change, particularly the sort of big asset management and investment companies. They talk a lot about ESG investing and not so much about what they're actually doing. So I think it is good that the FCA has launched this greenwashing consultation, but I just wondered what your thoughts are on sort of what financial services is doing to tackle ESG issues.
I think it's mixed, isn't it? It's mixed, I would say. I mean, we're working with some firms that this is like totally on their priority agenda. You know, we've got one business that has done loads of work around ESG. They've looked at all the different you know, scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, and they want to be, you know, a carbon neutral business. It's not just about sustainable investing for them. It's everything they do as a business, from making sure they've, you know, they've got the recycling bucket in the offices, to looking at their suppliers, asking how they're looking at their carbon footprints. They've really gone all out with it, and it's just a core part of, you know, how they do business now. That's at one end of the scale. At the other end of the scale, I think there are, you know, firms that aren't really focused on it at all. We're seeing some good you know, firms that are looking at things like B Corp.
Yeah.
And those initiatives, which is brilliant. It's something that, you know, we have got something we want to consider for MoneyInfo at some point. And we obviously play our part in ESG for firms as well, because we do help them reduce emissions to some extent by going paperless and by using technology to help with that. So I think it varies across the advice firms that I speak to, but it's certainly, you know, the investing side of it is on the agenda for most people, I think, in terms of the sustainable investing that they're advising their clients on. But it's obviously more than that, isn't it? It's living and breathing. It's a thing you can't, you know, it has to ripple through everything. And it's a challenge, I think. It's hard to understand how to measure everything, to go down that chain and look at, you know, your partners and providers and suppliers and everything that's in between that. So I think it will continue to grow as these things do, and it will continue to become more of a priority for more firms over time. And that's, you know, nothing but a good thing. And it's certainly, you know, for us as a business, we've just put an electric car scheme in, for example. You know, we're looking at how we can become a more sustainable business over time. But these things do take time. You know, you can't do it overnight. But I suspect appetite for it is still a little bit mixed at the moment, because firms have so many priorities and things that they need to look at.
Yeah, definitely. No, have you looked into B Corp much? It's quite a sort of robust and rigorous, I think.
It is, and that's why we don't want to dive into something like that until we can really commit the resource to do it. And as a, you know, as a fintech business with limited resources, as everybody has in their business, we've got to be mindful of that. But we're certainly doing some exploratory work in the background around that. I think it's a brilliant initiative, and it's not, you know, across everything, across how you look after your staff. You know, we have some really strong values and culture in this business. And it's really important to us that our staff are, you know, heavily invested in the business, they're passionate about what we do, they enjoy what we do, and that we look after them. So those elements really appeal to me as well, in terms of how it will, you know, dovetail into our culture and things like that. So yeah, it's a biggie. And we've done, you know, we've taken some steps, certainly, but, you know, it's something that it's going to take a while to get to, I think. But yeah, it's certainly something that I'm interested in.
Yeah, definitely. No, I wrote about it quite a lot when I used to write for a food and drink retail magazine. Quite a lot of the sort of food and drink companies seem to be the first movers on B Corp.
Yeah, I was listening. I went to an industry event recently and listening to, I can't remember the gentleman's name, from First Wealth, who'd gone through the B Corp scheme and done some brilliant stuff. And he spoke really passionately. That's it, Anthony Villis. Yeah. Thank you for that. Sorry, Anthony, for forgetting your name if you're listening. But they've done some brilliant work, and he spoke about their journey and what they've done in terms of B Corp. And it was fascinating and quite inspiring, actually. So, yeah, I'd recommend more people look into this, because it is, you know, it's a game changer for any business, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Well, certainly the next generations and some of the older generations are becoming more aware of these issues, and therefore I think they're wanting to interact with and do business with companies that are seen to be doing good. So it's definitely a good one to look at.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I think probably that's all we've got time for this episode. So thank you so much for joining me, Tessa. It's been really great to talk to you. Very interesting.
Oh, you're very welcome. I've enjoyed chatting to you as well, Lois. So thank you. Thank you very much too.
Brilliant. And to our listeners, if you would like to listen to more of our podcasts, do check them out on our website. And you can also follow Money Marketing on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.